So I found some great images of joy to share with you. I want you to imagine that you're a photographer and you hope to catch some images that will work for whatever it is you're trying to illustrate. A news story, an article in a Nature magazine, a collage reflecting an emotional state. You have felt the elation of capturing some wonderful images in your photography career. Some came at the end of a long day of patiently waiting, and others when you just happened to be in the right place at the right time. Whoops. Oh, no. I'm sure that'll get fixed. You also know that you have missed what could have been a perfect shot because you weren't ready. Joy is a little bit like that. And I'll come back to this idea in a while. I'll confess that when I chose the title for my sermon today, that joy comes in the morning, but what about tonight? I didn't know exactly where the phrase came from. I mean, I knew it came from the Bible. I was raised as what you might call a casual Methodist. And except for a couple of times when I went to youth group with my best friend at the Christian church, I have not spent a lot of time reading the Bible. Now that I'm a UU, ironically, where Jewish and Christian teachings are one of our six sources, and especially now that I'm headed to seminary, I'm thinking more about that book and about other sacred texts and how maybe we can find some wisdom in those, even if the belief system doesn't always fit. So I looked up the phrase about joy coming in the morning, and it turns out it comes from Psalm number 30, actually from one half of one verse of Psalm 30. And it says, "Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning." There's a lot more to the psalm than that little bit I pulled out. It includes people wrestling with what it means to be human, how they can explain their emotional feelings, how they stay connected with their idea of the divine, and how to stay hopeful, even when they feel despair. And there is gratitude, and there's joy, and gladness, and dancing. And no matter our theology, joy and gladness and dancing are things we could all use a little more of. I've had times in my life when I did not feel gratitude for what I was going through, when I believed that I might never feel joy or gladness or like dancing again. Times like the weeks before and the months after my mother's death, when just getting out of bed and getting through the day with a minimum of crying seemed like a victory. I would guess that many of us in this room have had similar experiences. Those times when it seems that joy, or even just the absence of misery, will never return. The psalmist's assurance that although weeping may endure for the night, joy comes in the morning, can ring hollow if you don't share the psalmist's faith in a God that will intervene on your behalf. So I'm going to leave it up to you to decide whether you think joy coming in the morning is a sure thing or not. I'm not sure what I believe about it. So I can't talk about the certainty that joy will always return. But what I do want to address is the idea that we can be ready. We can prepare ourselves and make our lives fertile grounds for joy. So what is joy? In the Soul Matters materials for this month, I found a series of videos from the Yale Center for Faith and Culture called The Theology of Joy. On YouTube, you can watch videos from this group called What is Joy? Or What's the Difference Between Joy and Happiness? Or How Can a Person Cultivate Joy? Oh, good, it came back. The video called What is Joy? Shows scholars sharing their definitions of that word. I loved the variety of approaches and ideas about what joy is. Some of the ones I liked best are these. Joy is when you care about the world being a certain way, and it appears that it is that way. Joy is happiness plus gratitude. Joy is an act of resistance against despair and all its forces. Joy is a connection to something beyond ourselves. It's transcendent. Joy is a deep-seated sense of well-being with oneself and one's life, which comes from a wisely lived life. Joy is a fruit of the Spirit along with love, peace, patience, kindness. Joy is not so much a goal, but a product of faith, hope, and love. Joy is a work that can become a state, that can become a way of life. There's a variety of experiences here, from joy as a momentary feeling, to joy as a practice, to joy as a way of life. That first definition is that momentary experience. Joy is when you care about the world being a certain way, and it appears to be that way. Maybe you've looked around the table at a holiday meal, looked at all those beloved faces around you, and felt a moment of joy because you care that they're all here together, they all appear to be healthy and happy. Or maybe you watched a child learn to walk, and you feel joy when they take a step and they are so proud, as you think they should be. Or when you're with a group of people who think it's important to work to make the world a better place, and you see that everyone is working together on that important goal. The definition that suggests that joy is a practice is one that says that joy is a fruit of the Spirit, a product of faith, hope, and love. But to me, the golden ticket is joy as a way of life. If you're like me, you're thinking, I want me some more of that joy. I'm a bit of a joy glutton. The trouble is, we can't be joyful on demand. But we can. There we go. We can make ourselves ready for joy, ready to recognize it when it comes our way. So imagine you're that photographer again. You might spend days waiting for the perfect shot, adjusting your camera settings as the light changes, and the perfect shot still might not come. But if it does come, and you're there with your camera properly focused and set, and if you're paying attention and not playing solitaire on your phone, you'll have a good chance of catching a beautiful shot. That photographer's formula for success has some clues for us about how to make ourselves ready for joy. As I started writing this, I had some ideas of what might work. So I read a few articles and put my Googling superpowers to work and tested my hypothesis. There were a lot of different strategies out there, but by far, the number one way to make yourself ready for joy was, any guesses? Drink. Okay. Ooh, those are good ones. So the number one answer was to do difficult yoga poses in dangerous places. No, the number one answer is mindfulness. Mary Oliver's poem that Bobby read so beautifully earlier describes a mindful way of living. She says, "Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations." She says that these common, ordinary things in her life teach her to be wise and instruct her in joy. Mary Oliver makes it sound so simple. And I know that mindfulness is simple in its approach. Just breathe and notice. But if you ever tried it, you know that it's hard. This mindfulness thing is hard in our culture when we're supposed to be on 24/7. It's hard when our media has adjusted to our shortened attention spans by giving us even shorter items to watch and read so that we can get through them before the next shiny thing catches our eye. Nevertheless, hard or not, mindfulness is one of the keys of readying ourselves for joy. If we're worrying about the future or ruminating on the past, we're going to miss the moments of possible joy happening right in front of our eyes. Being mindful can also help when we are in that long night of weeping mentioned in the psalm. If we're mindful, maybe we can stop judging how terrible our circumstance is and try to see it in a more neutral way, instead of, "This is the worst thing that has ever happened to me in my whole life." Maybe we can say, "This is horrible, but I'm breathing. I'm breathing again. And I'm breathing again." And once we've turned off the histrionics in our brains, we can get some perspective and be a little more open to any joy that might come our way. The second most common answer to how to create more joy in your life is to engage in a practice of gratitude. Dick read Anne Sexton's poem, Welcome Morning, in which she writes about being grateful for the small things that make up her every morning. She's mindful of each of them, grateful for each, and says there is joy in all of it. She says, all this is God, each morning. And I mean, though I often forget, to give thanks, to faint down by the kitchen table in a prayer of rejoicing. And at the end, she doesn't forget to express her gratitude and the belief that gratitude is inextricably linked with joy. She writes, so while I think of it, let me paint a thank you on my palm for this God, this laughter of the morning, lest it go unspoken. The joy that isn't shared, I've heard, dies young. Now, gratitude beginners, like some of us are sometimes, might not find ecstasy in their coffee every morning. But this practice of speaking and sharing gratitude often develops from a sporadic practice into something more regular and deeper that permeates a person's every moment. Most religions advise us to give thanks, and science tells us that happiness and gratitude are mutually reinforcing. Gratitude begets happiness, and happiness begets gratitude. The third way to ready ourselves for joy is to find a way to live a life of service. And it might help if your brooms are as beautiful as these. We have been told that it is better to give than receive, but it turns out that's true not just in a moralistic way, but in our brain chemistry. In fact, studies show that in a situation where one adult gives a gift to another, the giver has a more positive experience than the recipient. Sharing our time, efforts, and energy makes us happy. And if we combine those with gratitude, we often get joy. I had to go back to that one. It's so good. The fourth way to get yourself ready for joy when it comes your way is to play. Kids know how to do this. They had some great jokes up here that you couldn't hear. But they play all the time. And when we adults are with them, we often play too. But if we're not around children much, or if we're just out of practice, playing can feel awkward. So stay with me. When I say play, I don't mean you have to play baseball or jump rope or play board games. I'm just thinking about activities in which you can lose yourself or at least lose your inhibitions. Maybe you like to play with words in writing. Maybe you sing in silly voices in the car. Or maybe you like to make up silly songs or amuse yourself or your friends with your dancing. Or maybe those are all just me. I don't know. The important part of play is letting go of that judging mind. If you're busy judging yourself, your success or failure, or judging others, you're going to have a hard time losing yourself in the play. You may already know you like to play, and even so, I want to challenge you to try out a new way of playing, like maybe laughing yoga. You may find something entirely new that is pleasurable and opens the way for joy. And to help you remember, I'll be handing out a little gift as you leave. So all this is well and good, and now we just feel so good. But what's the point? Why? What good is it beyond our own feelings to have more joy in our lives? I believe it's important. I believe we should try to have more joy in our lives because it makes us more resilient and more able to resist despair. I believe we should try to have more joy in our lives because it gives us strength to do our work for justice and peace. I believe we should try to have more joy in our lives because when we are joyful and when we are playful, we help others be ready for joy too. I want us to be ready, like the photographer who captured this photo. I want us to be ready. Joy may be on its way to us, and I don't want us to miss it. The world needs us to be resilient, strong in our work for justice and peace, and willing to share joy with the people around us. The world needs joy. Are you ready? I'm ready.